Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and this episode will be our final part of our Unity series, which was originally going to be three parts, so we recorded all of part three. It was really long, so we broke it up into two parts, part three, and in part four, which is our final part, we're just going to pick up where we left off.
Okay, so UI. UI is actually pretty awesome. It can be a little bit of a beast to kind of get used to how it gets set up. So I wanted to show setting up. We're gonna split it into a couple or two main UIs, I guess, if you will.
Okay.
The first that we're going to look at is if we're looking at the game, we're gonna have hearts up in the right corner, one for each hit that we can have. So we're gonna have three hearts, and then on this side we're gonna have score.
Okay.
And that's gonna be the game scene. Or game UI scene. And then on top of this, when the game starts, we want to have a friendly scene that's going to pop up that's going to have the game name, and it's going to have some cool little ships that we've already seen, but they're going to be cool looking. And then it's going to have a button, and then you click the button, it'll take you into the game, and that screen will hide. The game screen with the hearts and stuff is going to show. You'll see that screen until you die, basically. That's the only way to end the game. And then when you die, everything's going to freeze.
Yep.
And then the starting screen that's going to have the logo is going to pop up with it's going to say play, and you're not going to see the score. And one of the design challenges or development challenges is to go manipulate the screen a little bit. So you change the text of the button and show the score and stuff is right. Kind of the prompt for it. So we'll start with the main game scene first, because that's the easier one of the two to set up. So to work on the UI, if you right click and you go to UI. You have some options here. So you got some really good ones, text, image. I'm actually not sure the difference between image and raw image. I never use raw image. Button, a few other things, toggle, slider, all sorts of fun stuff. Dropdown is actually a fairly new one. So happy they have that. I used to have to try and recreate it. Not easy to do, or not fun to do, I guess. It's probably the better way to put it. Same with like scroll view. For some reason, I always struggled trying to remember how to make that because it was a game object on top of game object. But the key thing that you need is to start creating a UI, you have to have a canvas. Everything will be, under the canvas. So if I create it, and we pop over to here, you can see there's some things that are kind of unique to it. So first, before I forget, rename it to user interface. So we have a scaler. The canvas render mode, you have a couple choices. This is going to be probably one that you'll mess with a lot. So screen space overlay is what we're going to work with. It's just basically overlaying the screen space, exactly what it says. Screen space camera is overlaying the camera. So if you do this, you can see that you can give it a reference to the camera. If you had like multiple cameras in your scene, that's where this one would potentially be useful. And a few other reasons, I guess. World space is really, really neat. So we won't dive into it, but if you think about, like, you have a 3D game, and actually I used this for a zombie game prototype that I had done. So think of like a 3D world, and you have zombies that are kind of coming at their 3D objects, and maybe you have like a gun and you're shooting the zombies. You'd do world space if you wanted their health to like appear above their head. You know, it's like you're shooting them and you want to say like, oh, you've done, 100 damage or something, and it's kind of going up, and it's like this flashy thing that tells you, like, you're doing a lot of damage to him. You'd work with that in world space, most likely.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to stick with screen space. There's a few others. We're not going to dive into them, but these manuals, you can learn more, and then there's also a really good video that Unity actually put out that talks about this, because this UI system is actually still fairly new. I think it was like 4.3 they introduced it. Didn't exist before then. You used to have to write everything in code. So I love and hate both the UI. I'm very glad it's there, but sometimes it drives me bonkers.
Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and this episode will be our final part of our Unity series, which was originally going to be three parts, so we recorded all of part three. It was really long, so we broke it up into two parts, part three, and in part four, which is our final part, we're just going to pick up where we left off.
Okay, so now that we have that, we're going to go UI, and then panel. You can see that it just kind of provided this little white thing. This is letting us know that like we're on the screen space and the panel is basically 100% scaled, which we can see kind of here. We're going to play with that here in a second. If we pop over to scene view, you can see here, our game's down there. This is all really large up there. So it's basically taking this and it's kind of applying it to our screen, so it's handling the scaling. But what you'll find is if you need to kind of manipulate this, it looks, I guess, a little bit tricky to do. A nice trick that I have is if you push this little button into 2D, it's gonna basically position this so that you can work with it really easily. And this is key because we're gonna use these things called anchor points to help us set our proper positions.
Okay.
So now this might not make total sense, but it will as we start to add things to it. Okay, so our panel is basically gonna really just be our container. We didn't need to necessarily add a panel because I'm actually gonna delete the image. This right here is what's setting the panel to be this kind of white. When I'm working on setting an initial layout, I usually will leave the panel there so that I can see its total screen space that I'm working with. And then if I don't need it, I'll just delete that mm-hmm. image that's kind of representing it off of the thing. So that's kind of why it's here right now. This is going to be a game screen. Okay. Now under game screen, like I said, we wanted hearts on the top right. But before we add the hearts, we want a way to organize them so that they're being displayed on the UI nicely in the way that we want without really having to manipulate it too much. So what I did is I added an empty game object. And we can see here, which I guess I didn't really talk about. So I should. I'm sorry about that. Remember in part one, I think it was part one, we talked about how a transform on like a regular game object is going to set its size, position, and rotation. And that's a lot of what we've been manipulating.
Right.
When you're working with a UI-related stuff, it's no longer just a transform. It's a rect transform that you end up working with. And so we can see that right here. It renamed it to rect transform. And this is going to just be, it's going to be a little bit different. So the easy thing to reference is you can see you still have scale and rotation,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can still scale your UI, you can still rotate stuff. Some things will maybe behave a little bit oddly if you try to do it, but you can still do it. The thing that you have that's different is basically the positioning stuff that you can end up working with. So if we click this button here, we have a wide range of different options. Basically what we have are essentially pivot points and then scaling, I guess, or stretch, I think is what they call it, stretch. So the orange are kind of where we'd want to pivot this. So for example, if I left this here, you can see we're in the center,
mm-hmm.
and I clicked this, it moved those three things into the top right corner. We're saying that's where we want our anchor point to be. And so these are kind of just preset ones where you can click it and manipulate it. I find that most of the time, I actually need to just set these myself because it's not good enough for my needs, which is what we're going to do. If you click on these kind of stretch ones, we can see it actually separated out our anchor points.
Okay.
So if we go back, I'm going to show you kind of less than ideal behavior. I could technically just take this and move it and position it wherever I want. But the thing is, as my window is scaling, right, because you got to think about different resolutions that you're doing, especially if you're working with a PC type game. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you don't know necessarily what you can force it technically, but there's going to be lots of resolutions that you work with. Setting the anchor points is going to help position your stuff. You're basically setting, I'm trying to think of how to word this. I've actually not had to explain anchor points before. You're basically setting, I guess, for lack of another way to put it, your constraints on where you want something to be in terms of screen space. So going back to,
so you're saying that right now, that rectangle is at 527:267, regardless of the size of the screen.
Yes.
And the anchor point says upper right.
The anchor point's actually, no.
If you put it in the upper right.
If we were to move the anchor point, it
right.
would say, yeah, we're pivoting, essentially,
yep.
around
okay.
the upper right. But
right
now, we're not set to properly do it. So if we were to scale, it's just not going
right.
It's not going to do it right. And I think, I'm trying to figure out if I could easily show that. I think I can easily show it a little bit later when we're doing the other UI. Okay, so what you want to do, so you can actually click any of the anchor points to kind of stretch it. What we want to do is we're going to position our hearts to be basically to fill up like, I don't know, right around here. That looks good.
Okay.
What happens, so we positioned our anchor points, but this is not actually set to the right positioning. We have to reset it. So if we hit 0, 0, 0, 0, we can see it filled up where we set our anchor points to. So that's
okay.
kind of a key thing to remember. This is going to be health. So it's going to be a container object, essentially. Now, if we look at our components, you can use components to help build up the display and technically the behavior of your UI, which we'll look at when we do buttons. So when we go to do the button, you'll see more around like the behavior stuff. Mm-hmm. But if we're looking at adding a component, you can see there's actually a fair amount of stuff here. What I want is not UI, I actually wanted layout. And so these are things that are going to kind of help us with it. You see, I think Canvas Scaler was one that we saw on the canvas that was sitting there. These three are actually the three that I will tend to use the most. So horizontal is going to basically do stacking horizontally. Vertical is going to do the same. And then grid is what we're going to work with. And you kind of have some control over, oops, sorry about that. I guess I didn't shut that off. You kind of have some control over the layout, but you're going to have a little bit more fine-grained control over the grid. So that's what we're going to work with.
Okay.
So basically what you're doing is you're setting with a grid. You can think of it as really as a grid or like an Excel cell sheet where you have columns and rows,
yep,
essentially, that we're going to manipulate. So we're going to set the cell size. I don't know. We'll set it to 80, and then we'll tweak as we need. You don't know that we need to do any spacing. Again, we'll tweak as we need. Start corner, I actually want the hearts to basically kind of be on the right. So I want to start eating away from the left at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll set the start corner to be the right. The axis should be fine. And then we're going to do the child alignment to be the right, which is actually also going to feed into where those are there. Constraint. Technically, I think we could probably get away without having to do this, but I'm going to mark it as a fixed row count, and I'm going to say we only want one row. So I don't want like a stack of hearts to go down. I want it to be in a long thing. And so mm-hmm. we only have three. We probably wouldn't really hit this, but it's still kind of good. Okay, so to see this in action, if we go under UI and we add image, and we're going to add it as a child image, and we change the sprite to be this heart, which is good. You can notice like the heart's actually not scaling right. You can do preserve aspect ratio, and then it'll scale properly, which is quite nice. What I can see here is I have the cell height set to 80, and it looks like I just set my scaling thing to be a little bit different. That's why this is matched when I set my anchor points for its parent object is bigger than where it's rendering. It's not a big deal, so I'm just going to leave it. But that's why there's a little bit of a mismatch. So I'm going to pause here and talk about a really neat trick that you can do. So if you notice, my heart's gray.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very visually accurate.
Right.
The reason I created it, and this is actually one that I created, one of like the few graphics in this game that I made. So the reason I went with a grayscale heart is because Unity will actually let you apply a color onto it. And this can be very, very useful. So if I know that I have an object where I want to apply one color to it, but maybe I want a little bit of flexibility on what that color is,
mm-hmm.
I'll create the object with grayscale, and I'll just use lights and darks to kind of add my shading, and then I'll use Unity to apply my coloring. And so when we're looking at the image, if we look at this color section right here, it's got white applied to it, which is why it's happening. So if we kind of drag it to, I don't know, a color that we want, you can see the heart's changing.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps a bit with, I don't know what color I want, helps a bit with kind of productivity if you want have something that you want to do. So one of the games that I'm working on right now, I don't like any of these colors. It's funny, normally it's really quick for me. One of the games that I'm working on right now is it's like a customization thing, and it's a boat game, a pirate boat ship game, so that'll make more sense. And I actually created a grayscale like cartoon skull and crossbones, and that's like a button that you click, and when you click it, color palette options choose, and then it's your setting, like your sail or your trim.
Okay.
And then I apply that color to the skull and crossbones, so I can easily display the color to the user in like a fun, kind of silly image,
right.
I guess. So it's a really handy trick.
Cool.
Okay, so let's call this a heart. And then Control D a couple times, and we can see we've got the three hearts. If we pop over to the game, we can see they're popping here. I'm actually going to go ahead and get rid of the panel image because I think it's kind of taken away from the design. But one thing I want to show you before, so for some reason you think if this ends up becoming, and to align it with how much screen space I'm willing to allocate to it, if you will. So we'll put it there. And again, that same thing, now that we've positioned it, the actual thing is not where the rest of it is. Okay. So if we zero everything out, it's going to position it. Super small text, not quite what we want. So if we click, you have a couple options. We could just increase it to 50 if mm-hmm. we wanted. Alternately, you can leave it here. You can pick best fit. And then what it's going to do is, depending, again, on screen resolution, it's going to find between your values, so basically between nothing and 50, mm-hmm. it's going to find what size it can be. And you can alter these. We're not really going to run into a problem, so we'll just leave it. And then the other thing is, if you want to change the font, which we do, you just pick that little button that we talked about, and then mm-hmm. you can just double-click your font. I realize I was going a little quick there. So used to doing it. Okay, and the other thing is, let's get it a little... Actually, let's get, No. I'll go down a rabbit hole. I don't want to go down. Okay. I was going to get into like all sorts of positioning tweaks. It's my biggest problem with doing this stuff, is it just has to be perfect when it comes to UI. It drives me bonkers when it's not. Okay. I think that's about everything for that. The other thing I wanted to show. So in some cases, you might have an image where maybe you want like a little bit of a shadow. It doesn't always look the greatest. But you can add a shadow component.
Okay.
And you can see it added a little bit of one. You can tweak the values if you want. It doesn't scale perfectly. So some scenarios it's going to look good, and some scenarios it's not going to look good in. It just depends. We can do that same thing. And if you noticed, I clicked all of them and then added the shadow component, and it did it to every single one. So it's kind of a nice little trick. I could have actually done it. I could have selected everything and done it. But if we add it to it. So if we come back in, this is what we look at. And then if we wanted the hearts to be spread out a little bit, we could just add some spacing to it. So I don't know. 10 actually isn't bad. So if we just add the 10, the grid's going to handle that type of stuff for us, which is quite nice. And then that's it for the game screen, although we should rename this from text. And then, so Unity doesn't autosave. Just make sure as you're working, you're constantly saving. Okay, so that is the game panel. The other panel that we had that we needed to get created, if you right-click UI, we're going to add one more panel in here. It's going to be the main screen. Oops. All sorts of clicking random stuff. Main screen.
So this is what's going to first appear?
Yep. Yep, so really what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of lay something pretty out for the screen. So I'm going to, basically what I did is I'm hiding the visibility of this, which is actually fine because we're going to use code to manage it for us anyway. So we'll hide it. We have main screen. I'm just going to get rid of the image component because we don't really need it there. And then the player is going to irritate me while I'm working, so I'm going to shut the player off real quick. If I run into code problems, remind me that I did that, please. That's gotten me a couple times. Okay, so we have the panel created. I just went and deleted the image instead of turning the alpha down. We're going to put an image in. This first one that we're going to do is going to be the logo. We can see it's got some scaling stuff, which we'll fix here in a second. So if we click perspective, maintain it, it fixes it. Mm-hmm. But we actually need to set up its positioning. Sometimes it can be a little difficult to grab these anchor points. Mm. If you go to do it and you miss, just try again. Other times I found if I set an anchor point to, what's that? That's 50. What did I say this guy was? If I set the anchor point to like the top right and I split them, sometimes that'll fix my inability to grab it. I honestly don't know if it's my fault or if it's something that Unity is doing. But it happens frequent enough that, again, it's probably not quite me. Okay, so let's see how that looks.
What did you create that image in?
This image?
Yeah.
I used GIMP, which is a free version, it's like Photoshop, but free, essentially. Really nice program, a little bit interesting to kind of get used to UI-wise if you're very used to like Photoshop. I don't like the sizing of this, so I'm just going to go a hair bigger. There, I'll just put it there. And then I swear I won't mess with the sizing anymore, even if it looks really bad. That was live probably well. Okay, I think that looks good.
Yep.
Okay, so we have that. We'll call this logo. And then we're gonna just kind of stack images here. So we'll do another image, and this is gonna be ship, oops, red. So there's actually opportunities to do something really cool with this that we didn't have time to do, so I didn't. But I was going to give a little bit of guidance on the development challenges for anyone who wants to do it. And then as we start to crack into those challenges, show how it could be done. Because you could, I actually think it would be really cool, you could animate these ships coming in when the game first loads. So you can have them basically off the side of the screen, and then have them fly into position, and then have them shoot the laser, and then the laser stop. I thought that would actually be a really cool intro to it. We're going to rotate. I think it's X I want to rotate on. Oops, no. Y. Always a Z. Goodness gracious. There we go. I was going the wrong way. We're going to go negative 90, so we're going to go this way. So one thing you can do, so I don't like this positioning. I actually don't even like the size of the ship necessarily. So I'll move this around to kind of get my positioning a little bit right. I think that's probably good. And then if you hold down the control button, you can pick this entire thing and move it. So I'm just going to kind of line it up with where I've put it. So sometimes this can be easier than just working with the anchor points. Stop me if I'm going too fast or not making any sense at all. There we go. I think that's fine.
Okay.
Okay, so again, we can use the duplicate, right? So if we duplicate the ship, we'll do laser, and this one's going to have a green laser. We're going to make it look like the ship is shooting stuff. So if we kind of bring our anchor points to, I don't know, something like this. We're going to have to tweak this here in a second. We move it, and then we go here, and we go... There we are. Here's your green. And then remember, we have to kind of force it back in.
Yep.
Ugh, very tiny. Actually, that's probably not the worst, but I want to bring it closer. There.
Mm-hmm.
That's good enough. Looks like it's shooting. One of the things you could see, so the ship is above, right? The text.
Yeah.
Easy fix for that, actually, if we move it down. Is you just bring the logo. Oops, I popped it out of its thing. There we go. It's just order, the hierarchy of ordering is essentially it. So that could pop it below, which is actually kind of the effect I like. I like it a little bit below it. As you can see, our laser's a little bit off now. And technically, we should have a gun. We're shooting nothing. So let's zoom in and create a gun real quick. Laser red, or ship red. And this one's going to be... behind it, and then we'll go ship red gun.
Is there a need to name these?
I like it for hierarchy. No, technically you wouldn't have to, but boy, will your project get very unruly if you're if you're not on top of your naming and you start to do a big one. Let's see here. So I need to make. Oops. See, sometimes just grabbing it. There we go. There we go. Let's put it on its thing so we don't have to really mess with the laser. You can see, like, some of the UI just ends up being more trial error type stuff than anything. We're gonna just do regular 90. And I think it's a little bigger. So once we have this ship done, we can just duplicate it and then switch out the images a hair and position it, and we're good on that. And we can go back to hooking up the UI so that it actually behaves properly. I think that's fine. Actually looks like, yeah, that's pretty fine. Okay, I'm just gonna sit here and harp on it if I don't.
No, it's fine.
But don't move on. Okay, so I'm just duplicating. And first thing, so, oh, see, missed. Missed it just by a hair. Ah! Where am I grabbing the, what am I on? Oh, I'm on the gun. That would make sense. Oh, jeez. There we go. In line. That feels like it's probably pretty in line. We'll move it. This is just going to be 90. And I had a ship that we're not even using, but that I really liked for the UI. Some of these I stared at for a long time going, which way is it supposed to actually face? So I fully admit some of these might not be facing the right way. I know this, I think at least this guy is supposed to go. I think he was actually right the first time around. He's a little bit bigger, so we'll bring him down just a bit. And that looks good. All right, so the gun. Oh, I moved the wrong one. That sucks. Blue. And then our ship. See, this is why naming becomes important.
Yes, okay.
Okay. Oops. Wrong buttons. 90. There we go. And then the laser. And this one's going to shoot a red laser, so we'll swap that out. Is a little off. And the laser's also pointing the wrong
There's
direction.
No way to automatically move the anchor and then get the left top, right bottom, etc. to stay zero?
Not that I've seen. But there could just be a trick that I don't know. Okay. And then.
Okay.
There cool. we go. Yeah, so what I was explaining, one of the things, we have to add the button still, so we're almost done. But what I was explaining was these would actually be really cool if you had the ship fly out from the side, and you could do that with the animation, have it come into play, stop, shoot, and then have the thing kind of pause in there. I think that'd be pretty interactive. Fun little main screen. Okay, so the last thing we need is a button. So we can go to the UI button. You could technically create a game, an empty game object, and just add a button and an image on it. Because remember, you can build up those components as you want. In this case, it's just silly because they have it predefined. So we'll just call this like play button. Now, buttons have a lot of pretty interesting things that you can do with them. For example, if we go to sprite swap as our option. So actually, let me show what color tint does. So if we play the game, I think we'll probably get some stuff spawning and moving around. But if you play it, you can kind of see when I click, it turned gray. And we can't see on this screen, but it should be turning slightly different color for the hover. But we can't quite tell on this one, but it should. So the point of color tint is you can basically apply color tint if you're if you've got highlighting, if you're pressed, if you're disabled, you can kind of visually indicate that really easy just by providing different colors. Alternately, you can do sprite swap. And then have it so that when you highlight, it just changes the image out instead of applying a color. I think I have a pressed image. Oh yeah, I do. Good. Okay, so that's our pressed image. We're not going to do anything for the highlight or the disabled. And the other thing that we actually need to do is we have to change the target graphics. So you can see the target one, this is a little confusing at first. So what it's doing for the target graphic is it's actually looking at where an image component would exist on it. So what you're doing, that's bad wording. What it's looking at is for a component, not a sprite, I guess is the better way to put it. And the component is this image one here. So basically, the image is set to this UI sprite, which is just default. And this target graphic is set to point at the image component. So if we change this one over to button up, you can see it shifted a bit to our image. And so it applied it down here. And then our down is this one. Obviously, this is just way too small to really even work with visually, because we're kind of going for like this big bam in your face look. So we can do the same kind of anchor point stuff. One, two, yeah, that's probably fine. to set.
And where does it say button?
Ah, good question.
Or is that just built in, and then how do you...
Oh, you can mess with
under
that.
Under the text.
Under the text,
there we
yeah.
go.
So the components, the button is actually built up of basically two game objects. Text is here. So we want it to say play. And we want our font to be different as well. And then we're going to apply kind of that same techniques mm-hmm. that we had. So we'll go best fit.
Yep.
And then I feel like the black is just too harsh on your eyes. So we'll just take the color down a little bit on the text to go gray.
Okay.
And then it's a little bit less. So we go over here. We can see this is basically what the user is going to see, which I think is actually decent. I mm-hmm. would probably bring the thing in, but I won't. I won't do that. Okay, so that's kind of setting up the initial stuff. Should have been a little bit more organized, but that's okay. Can you tell I have OCD tendencies sometimes?
No, I haven't noticed yet.
Okay, so now you might be asking yourself, well, how do I make the button do something when I click? Well, self, fantastic question. That's this on-click section. So these are basically events that happen. Now, I'm going to pause here to explain something. What can sometimes happen as you're building it up? So when we created a canvas, it actually added two game objects into our hierarchy. It added the canvas that we started working underneath, and mm-hmm. then what people may or may not have noticed is it added an event system.
Okay.
This is required in order to actually do anything eventing, like adding on clicks to a button. So if anybody's ever in a situation where they have like a button built up, they have an on click, they're debugging, for some reason it's not getting called, make sure you have an event system okay. sitting in here, because it won't air out, or at least as far as I've seen, it doesn't air out. And that can be a big indicator of something going wrong. So again, when you create a canvas, it should most likely it'll create this. Okay. If you're building it from scratch, you would have had to add it on your own.
Okay. And it's not part of the game manager because the game hasn't started yet. So,
it has actually nothing to do with the game manager
game
at
manager.
All.
Okay.
So if we look at it, you can see it's a game object, so it's got its transform and stuff.
Right.
But you can see it's got an event system. Okay. And this is kind of handling, basically being able to talk to that event system. And then, I don't know if you, I don't know if I did this. Sorry, I'm just going to deviate away. Yeah, I did. Okay, so when I went and sized this down, in part one, I think I was saying, oh, like we're going to need to have submit and we're going to need to have
right.
cancel. That was actually because this event system would yell at us
okay.
if we didn't. So it would have said, it would have aired out and said, oh, we can't find a submit and we can't find a cancel in your input, which is actually kind of interesting. I backed into that problem once and discovered it. Anyway, so again, you can research more about this if you're interested, but as you're learning and starting out, the key thing is just make sure it's there if you're trying to do UI stuff that mm-hmm. involves the event system. Okay, so coming back to this, we'll come back to the on-click, because what we would be doing right now is we would hop into our scripting and we would basically code out a user interface class. And so again, because I wanted to focus more on this stuff, I went and already wrote one up. So I just want to walk through it, and then we'll hook up the rest of the UI and see it, and then we'll actually be done. Okay, so this is our user interface class. It inherits from Mono Behavior, because we're going to stick it on the canvas game mm-hmm. object. You can see we've got a couple things. We've got text, which is score text. Now, a good thing to note is if you're going to reference a text or button or anything that's kind of under the Unity engine, you got to make sure that you're it's under UI. For its namespace. So keep that in mind if like you go to type text and it's not popping up for some reason. We're going to have a reference to the main screen, the game screen, and the game manager. And mm-hmm. then we're also going to have a reference. So instead of doing a list, I actually did an array just to kind of show that really you can work with both. And we're going to have those health icons, those hearts, because we're going to yep. manipulate them. So the first method is adjustScore, does exactly what it says. The game manager is going to be what's calling this, and it's going to provide the score count to it every time something happens, and it's just going to adjust that text. So what we're doing is we're getting that component, or that game object, I should say. Oh, no, we have the text. We're getting the component on the game object, which when we go to drag it in the inspector will make a little bit more sense. Actually, let me just hop over here so that it makes sense now. Game manager, we had score, right?
Mm-hmm.
On score, we had text as the component.
Right.
What we're saying is we're storing a reference to this component.
Okay,
if we wanted to back up and go into everything, we would just say, you know, score text dot game object, and then that's going to let us kind of mess with everything. But we know we really only want to mess with the text, so we just store that reference. Whoops. Anyway, so all you do to manipulate it is dot text, and then set it to whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Kind of like WinForms when you go to set a text property on that. Okay, so the next one is decrease player health. Now this one's kind of fun to do. So before I explain, let's look again at our hierarchy. We've got game screen, which is basically what we're manipulating. But we have health, which was it was our empty game object where we had the grid, and then our child game objects are the three hearts.
Yep.
Okay, so keep that in mind. So we pop back over here. We're doing a for each loop. And basically what we're doing is we're looping through all of the children of our health game object. So to take this up a notch, what we're doing is we're saying, hey, game screen, which we have a reference on, we do transform, and then we're saying, let's find your children, find child, health, and let's get their transform.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just going to loop through all of that, and then what we get is the transform, and we're calling it heart. And then what we're doing is we're just basically saying, okay, if the one that we're on right now is active self, which basically means it's visible,
okay,
it's active, if this is true, then let's set it to false, and then we're just going to bail out of this. We're going to break because we don't want to manipulate anything else. So this will trigger every time the player gets hit.
So it's the first heart it finds, it turns it off, and then ends.
And then, yeah, ends it. It's, yeah, bails out of its thing. Not in the game or anything. Okay, so here is our start on click. So this is what's going to get tied to our button. Now, you don't have to have on click, but I like to try and name my stuff for like buttons and stuff. Probably just old habit, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think it helps keep your code clean when you start to get unruly or if you do. So what we're going to do when we start the game is we're going to set game manager to active. And remember, game manager has the code in start that enables spawning.
Yep.
So what we're actually going to do is we're going to have this object turned off until the person clicks play, and then we'll turn it on, which is going to initiate spawning all on its own.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to adjust the score to be zero, so we're going to reset that back down to nothing. And then we're going to again loop through our hearts. So we're going to do that exact same thing that we talked about, but the difference is we're going to make sure everything's turned on.
Got it.
So we're not going to destroy the game objects and then recreate them, because that would be pretty taxing and there's no point in it.
Yep.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to take the main screen, which is the one with the logo. We'll set that to false. And then we're going to turn the game screen back on so you'll see the hearts and the score. End game is going to basically be the reverse. We're going to take game manager. We're going to shut it off, which is going to disable the spawning, which you were saying, oh, the game's still running. That's what's going to control that. We have main screen set active. We're going to set that to true so that we have the play button that pops up again. And then game screen set active is false because we don't want them to see the hearts and that stuff. That stuff's going to disappear.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just too much going on and it's kind of confusing. So that is kind of the start of it. I'm just checking to... Okay. We have to do a couple of things inside of game manager and player in order to get them to function properly. And then that's it. So really, really quick... Let's pop over to Game Manager. And under End Game, we need to do a few more behaviors. So we have the toggle player. So basically, the game ends. We're going to show that main screen.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hide the game screen. We're going to toggle the player. And then we're actually going to leave the, I go through and delete it. We're going to destroy all of the spawned enemies, right? So it's just going to really reset back to kind of that start state. Alternately, you could just kind of pause their behavior if you wanted them to be there. But again, with this kind of flow, it just felt like there was a little too much going on the screen for the player.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's write a few things out here. So the first thing, cancel, invoke. So cancel, invoke. Okay, I want to call this one out. So remember, we're doing invoke. And what invoke is doing is it's calling a method after a certain... seconds is provided.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually basically got this on a loop that's happening. There's actually technically invoke repeat that you could call, but we didn't call it in this case because invoke repeat would take, you would call the method. The first parameter is how long you want to wait to call the method the first time.
Right.
And then the next parameter is how often do you want it to repeat? We're changing how often we want it to repeat. So it didn't fit here. It technically would have fit in a few other places. But what's happening is this is still running. It's still invoking. We want to stop it. So you can call cancel invoke, but the thing to be aware of is when you call it, it's actually going to cancel all invokes that are running on this mono behavior class. So if we had multiple going, we would essentially be canceling everything.
Can you pass a parameter to cancel invoke?
Not that I saw.
Oh.
Yeah.
How do you cancel one invoking? Can you do that?
I think you can.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Maybe you can. Oops. Ah, no, no, no. Have I just never known about this?
Hey!
You can! You can. Okay. I just have never done it that way. Good questions. All right, so let's get our for each. We're going to go game object, and then we'll call this enemy. And then this is in game game object dot find game objects by with tag. Sorry. Game objects with tag. Hopefully I spelled that all right. Did it like it? Oh, it did. Okay. Got off my IntelliSense. Okay, basically what we're doing, remember we tagged it with enemy?
Yep.
We're gonna loop through all of the hierarchy. Anything we tagged with enemy, we're gonna destroy it.
Okay.
So it's another kind of easy organizational thing. Destroy, and then we'll just do enemy. So that'll clear us.
Yep.
And then this is actually going to be what calls the user interface, so we need a reference to it. You don't technically have to declare everything public, but I think we talked about that in another part that we could do private and then in the search for it. Public, user interface. Oh my goodness, I need another word. user.
UI.
UI. I was staying away from UI.
Oh.
Oh, you know what? We'll just, okay, this is bad phase, but I think the lack of food is finally kicking in. Thanks. So my ability to name has like gone downhill. Or down underscore. So I wouldn't normally do this. I'd do this for private variables. I don't do it for public variables. But whatever. End game. Okay.
Okay.
So we'll call the user interface end game, which again is going to do all that fun stuff. Because we kind of want the separation of duties, I guess, if you will. Player script, we have to do. Where is player? There it is. We have to do just one thing. So if we die off, we need to end the game. Or no, if we're getting hit, user interface dot decrease. Oops. Oh, wait, this doesn't have a reference to user interface, does it? We could do. Goodness, sorry. Game manager. There we go. User. Oh, goodness.
MNGR.
Game. There we go. We can do it this way. Okay, so let me make sure that this is right. So you calculate the hit. You got hit. You're going to decrease your health, so that's going to take them all the way down. If you get to zero, then we end the game. Okay, yes, that's the right flow. And the last thing that we have to do is basically very similar thing, but on the player. I don't remember. I don't think this had a reference to game manager at all. All right, the game manager reference could have been moved to the base class, technically. I wonder why I didn't do that. All right, we'll just go for simplicity's sake, game manager. Oh, goodness. Yes, I know. Let's do that. And then I know what you're going to want. Yeah, so I would have normally put this in it just to call that out. Okay. Yeah. So we have it, but and we'll just drag and drop it on here. So that does that. So we have, so this is going to actually have to increase the score if it's before it dies off, so that we know that you killed something. So if we do game manager dot increment, oops. Do I not have an increment?
It's on the user interface.
I don't have it, that's why. I guess I missed that. That's weird. So, okay, so if we go public void increment score.
So that's on the game manager, not on the user interface?
Yeah, because the game manager was actually supposed to be tracking the overall score, and then we were feeding it into the user interface, but I guess I completely skipped that. So we'll just go private, we don't need to be private. Int score. logo. And then user interface. Where did I have that set to? I think it was like toggle score. Oh, just score. Yeah, so oops, that's right, I did that. And we'll feed it score. Okay. Okay, so that should actually force it. And then I did not save this. Oh, yeah. There. So when it dies, we'll tell the game manager to increase the score, and then when the score gets increased, we'll tell the UI to display that number.
All right.
Okay, so we got to make sure that we've actually set everything that needs to be set. So looking at game manager, it's missing user interface. So if we drag user interface to it, user interface doesn't want to do that. What? Oh, because I didn't add it. User interface. I swear I added it. Did I add it to something else? No. I guess I'm just imagining things. All right, so if we drag it on, it's going to get the reference to the user interface script only, not the game object, but the script, which is exactly what we want. So we did that. Now, if we come back over to user interface, we need to do the score text. So if we look down here, we see score. We drag and drop. It's going to get the text component only, so it's going to handle that for us. Main screen is this one. Game screen is this one. Game manager. And then our health icons. Again, why do I have a reference to health icons, but then I'm traversing through? I don't even think I'm doing anything with that. I'm not. All right, we're just not even gonna do that. I think I was going down a path and then cleaned my code up.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No worries.
Just kidding about needing it, apparently. Okay, so that's all of our references. The player one. Oh, right. That's why I was doing it the way I was doing it. Enemy is spawning. Okay. I was going down a very bad path. So let me explain why this is a very bad path. So we had the reference to game manager, right? On the enemy script. And we had assumed we were going to be able to just drop it in, right? Unity has a problem when you have a prefab referencing something that's existing only in your scene. So basically, if we were to pop over to like our enemy prefabs and try to give it a reference to game manager, when that actually gets spawned, it's not going to have the reference. It can't handle that. So what we really need to do is every time the enemy spawns, we need to have it go and get the reference. So it's basically going to just be, that's why we were doing it this way before and just spaced out on how, or why, I guess, or how I had this set up originally. So you can tell I've gone a little bit off of what I had originally built at this point. Okay, so game manager, so we'll do game object, find object of type, and then this is going to be the game manager class. And that's going to give us our reference. So it's basically your way around. We can't create it in it just because of some of the limitations that comes with it, but we can still grab that reference. It's just a slight pivot, if you will. Okay, so it looks like we have a couple errors. I broke some stuff, so let's see. Oh, I renamed. But that was kind of a neat example. So you can see I can actually tell what my coding errors are here. In some cases, they're left over from the game, which is this. So when we tried the game, we didn't have everything set up, which is what that reference is. This is a legitimate one. If you go clear, it'll clear off the ones that maybe aren't relevant or they were from your last playthrough, and then it'll still show you your ones. And you can double click it, and it's going to take you to your line.
Cool.
So really, really good integration between the two. Anyway, the problem here is that.
Nice.
We should see this disappear when it pulls it in. So there we go. Okay. Last thing we need to do is we need to say what happens when you click the button. So you can click this plus. You can actually add. We could keep going and add them. We only need the one. So don't really mess with these. I don't really mess with these very often. It usually tends to be runtime, but you can technically set it to runtime, or you can editor in runtime, and you can shut it off. So the way that grabbing the onClick works, technically you could hook like a handler onto it, so you could do it in code. I tend to stay away from that because a lot of times I'll forget where I did it or how I did it, and it creates more of a hassle when it comes to like debugging my code than mm-hmm. if I were to set it in the UI. So I tend to gravitate more towards this. But in order to get the method, you basically have to create a reference to the game object that has the script that contains your method. So user interface is the one that has our method. Mm-hmm. So we need to drag and drop that in here, and you can see this opened up, and now we have some choices. You could play around with these. Most of the time, you're probably not really going to mess with them. The key one is to look for whatever your script was. And if we hover over it, again, we're going to have like some of these. Actually, it's interesting. I never really noticed these. So you could actually use this to cancel your invokes. Okay. But in this case, it's... where's my click? There you are. It's start click is what we want. Mm-hmm. I want to show something real quick. So I don't have any parameters in it. You can do one parameter in your click methods that would hook up to it. I guess any one of these would be good. So let's look at the cancel invoke one that lets it. So it's saying that it wants a string. You could provide it a string. You can do a Boolean. There are some limitations on what types of parameters that you can provide, but basically primitives. Is essentially what you can work with, but one only per thing. So choose wisely. Anyway, in this case, we just have start. All right, so if we save and we pop over to the game, we push play. Hopefully everything will just work. Everything didn't work because we didn't turn off. So game manager was still enabled. We have to disable it because the play button's going to handle it. And then player... still
it's
disabled.
Re-enabled.
No, we're going to have it also handle turning the player on. So everything is disabled aside from our UI. Okay, so, and you know, I have to say, like, one of the things I really liked about doing this, so you could technically add another scene that has your UI and then swap. I didn't do it for a reason, and that reason was I liked the movement of space behind it. Yep. And it was just, it didn't make sense. All right, so if we click play.
Woo!
There we go. We're dead.
Nice.
And it pops us back onto this. So let's, we have a bug. So we clicked play again. Nothing turned back on, which is kind of interesting. So let's take a look at start. So I don't know what happened. Let's see. Probably something silly. So it runs through its first playthrough just fine. It's trying to connect to it. I can tell because the background's not moving. There we go. Whoops. I guess I don't care about this yet. Crap. So many. There we go. Okay. Take that. So in hindsight, there's a few things that I would do differently. The collider's way too big. Like you can tell, I would have actually missed him. Okay. So I'd go through and probably reduce that sphere collider that we have on these game objects to be more in line with the actual size of it. Okay, so let's let him kill me. I'm letting this happen, all right? I'm not dying on my own game. Just want that noted. All right, so we're still debugging. Let's see what's going on. So game manager, we can see, is... it is getting set to true. For some reason, our spawning didn't resume. I just score. I don't remember if our health actually came in. You can see there is nothing that's setting the player back. Oh, I know what it is. I think I know what it is. Did it start spawning? Let's see. I don't see anything, so I'm going to guess no, it's not spawning, which means it's not invoking. I think I know what it is. Okay. All right, so do you remember I was explaining start will run? I swear I'm missing, like, something as part of this. Okay, so start will run when the game object is first created, right? The game object already lives there, so start's not executing for us again. Mm-hmm. We just kind of enabled and disabled it. So one of the things that you can do is you can actually have an on enable. So if we do, again, Control Shift Q, I think it's on enable. So if we do on enable, this is basically going to trigger when we're altering that visibility.
Okay.
And what we really want to have happen is exactly the same stuff that's happening in start. So if we add an on enable and we just call start, that should actually fix this problem. So let's see.
we go.
There we go.
All right.
There.
We got a super space shooter game going.
We have a genuinely working game. That was not without bugs along the way.
All right. So one last thing. So now this works perfectly on your machine. How would you deploy it? How would you give it to others? We're not going to talk about putting it in any of the stores. We won't cover that here. But what if you just want to give it to me for beta testing or something?
Sure. Yeah, so if you go file, you got a couple things. You can do build settings and build and run. So if you go build, really, they'll kind of pop up. The difference is build and run will pop this up, and then it'll use its last settings and then deploy it. But so if you go into build settings, you need to make sure your scenes are there. So if you've got multiple scenes that you want to render, just make sure that you're adding them onto this list. And the other thing is, down here under platform, you kind of have your choices.
So what about game? Don't you need that too?
Game? No, this is, did I not cover scenes? Oh, geez. All right, let's back up real quick. I can't remember.
Oh, those are screens.
Those are scenes.
What was the main and the game were screens?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, that was UI screen.
All right, I just got the word right. Okay.
The scene was basically that entire environment that we were working at. And you can have multiple of those. So, like, per level, you might swap out scenes.
Okay. So. Right. Fine.
Okay. All right, so you just want to make sure that they're there.
Yep.
And then down under platform, you can select your choices. So if I wanted to give this to you, I would probably stick with my first choice. So and under here, you can kind of set your choices on what you want. So we're going to go Windows. You could pick down here. You can mark it as a development build. That's actually, that'll give you a console that'll pop up on the screen with errors. Not the most readable, but it basically, like, if I were to check build and I gave it to you and we got a null reference, it would pop up like in a console down below. But if you got like a bunch, it'll actually like it'll dominate the screen. So a lot of times I'll actually write my own little console to plug into instead. Anyway, so there's a few things that you can do, but basically you can do build or build and run. So let's do build. We'll go to the desktop and I'll make a new for Robert. See, look, you have your own folder.
Sweet.
Super. Super space shooter. So you can see, this is a pretty quick game, or a pretty small game, so it should build pretty fast. Even like my larger games doesn't tend to take terribly long to build. I was going to say, I'm about to eat my words, I bet. Okay, so we can see it built. If we did build and run, it actually would have executed it. And we've got some fun stuff here. So we've got the data files and everything that you need. I could basically just zip all of this and hand it to you.
Okay, do I need the PDBs?
No, not really. That's going to help with debugging.
Okay.
So we could skip that if we wanted.
All right.
But if you double click it, you get this kind of window. And then that's, you can actually end up setting settings to restrict screen resolution and quality stuff that's built and stuff. So if you're finding like your quality is too high for maybe the PC that's being downloaded or that's downloading it, that's something that you can do. And then you can check windowed, so we'll just leave it like that. If you're using the personal edition, you have no choice. You have to have this. If you're using the professional, you can remove it. Okay. But there you go. That's the game, and you'd be able to play it.
All right. Awesome. So instead of doing a part four, we did a very long part three.
Sorry.
No. This is great. So if you now made it this far and watched parts one, two, and three, you have seen how to build a simple Unity game. So this is, I think, an excellent introduction to Unity. There's obviously tons more, but we actually built a game.
Yes,
that's
we
very,
did.
That's very, very cool. So there's the game's on GitHub, so people can go get the pieces. We've got a link to, I added a link to the two previous episodes as well for the link to Kenny, where you got those
the
assets
graphics.
From.
Yep.
And there are going to be development challenges coming soon.
Yes, development challenges. Should be already posted by the time people see this.
Okay.
It's my goal that the day that this goes out, everything is there. So.
Okay.
But there are already kind of a few that are going. So I just want to, I guess, stress to people that development challenges aren't designed to be complete walkthroughs. They're more designed to get people used to the concept of breaking down a game into smaller pieces. And then in some cases, there are little helpful hints to kind of push along, but one of the things that I do want to do is start releasing how I would have solved the problem. It's not necessarily going to be the right or the only way, well, I'd like to think it would be a right way, but not the right way, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Right. So there's a lot of different ways that you can approach it, but one of the mm-hmm. main things when it comes to like game development is exploring and, you know, testing and running through and playing and encountering issues. That's going to be the best way to learn. So
all right.
Just to encourage
all
that.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
Yes.
Hope you enjoyed this, and we will see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.